Hi, this is Emily with your Politics in Action report on CJMQ 88.9 FM. The community of Black Brougham is initiating a project in terms of renewable energy. An article from the Temple explains the Blackwood Dam will be turned into a dam intended to act as a reservoir for Mill Pond. This plan has actually been discussed for nearly 30 years, so it is a project that is finally happening now. The original dam was built in 1950, and this new project is just building off of the old dam. The dam is intended to be constructed higher than the previous dam height, so that more power will be generated when falling from higher and hitting the turbine. The energy will be supplied to the electric grid at the hydro transformer site on the Colebrook Waterway. Hydro-Québec is said to be subsidizing the production of this project. The purpose of this project is to provide hydroelectricity, but on a much smaller scale. For those who do not know a bit of Knowlton's history, Mill Pond was initially full, but a few years ago they decided to empty it, limiting Knowlton's access to a primary resource, which would be a water source. So this project is an incidence of a community attempting to have renewable energy. It does make the community look good in terms of environmental protection and reducing our carbon footprint. It is a kind of project that makes the community look better having set projects, especially as Lac Brougham is a touristy location. It doesn't hurt the community's image. It also helps to revamp the community's image given that Mill Pond does not look as nice as it did prior to its drainage. This is just one example of how the community is striving to utilize what is left of its natural resources and turn it into something that is beneficial for the community. Quebec Finance Minister Carlos Letelier tabled what will be on the last budget prior to the provincial election. Before I get into the nitty-gritty of the components of the budget, I'd like to briefly offer some information in regards to the traditions of finance ministers. Did you know that in presenting a budget, finance ministers are always sporting new shoes? It is a tradition. Finance Minister Bill Morneau had worn new shoes in presenting the last federal budget. As such, Quebec Finance Minister Carlos Letelier was wearing new shoes, even admitting he purchased his shoes online from Aldo. Now on to the budget. The budget allocates majority of the funds towards health, education, and financial support for families. Education is expected to receive a 5% increase in funds for this year. This comes following several cuts to education funding previously made by the Couillard government. So basically, the Couillard government is just giving back the education system what it had previously taken before. The government will be saving, in part of not providing tax relief for citizens. Instead, the Couillard government will be providing tax relief for small to medium-sized businesses who will need the tax break to adjust for the minimum wage hike and can focus on keeping their employees, so hence no layoffs and less impact on unemployment. If people have jobs, then they have the opportunity to contribute and spend money in the economy. Despite not having a tax break, they will have a solid income as guaranteed with employment. The Quebec government will also look into taxing online corporations like Netflix, which aids with providing a cushion fund for investments. A main component of this budget is that there will be funds invested into reducing Quebec's debt. This comes in the form of reducing the province's debt by $10 billion over a period of 5 years, with investments from a special fund created in 2006. Quebec politicians have suggested that the presentation of this budget is a campaign scheme to win voter support, because it is the last budget presented before the election and during the election year. As prospects of the budget are favorable, this does play well with erasing all the budget cuts and deficits presented previously throughout the Couillard administration. In other words, presenting a favorable budget will now be the most memorable of the budgets and will rest in the minds of voters as they head to the polls. What is important to take away from this and any governmental budget is that the economy is one of the major areas citizens are the most concerned with. As long as the economy is performing well under government and they are not accumulating an extensive amount of debt, the government in power is perceived as managing the nation or province very well. Sure, maybe the Couillard government wanted to clean up the mess it made before potentially leaving office. but it is also definitely a mechanism of capturing much of the Quebec electorate. Within the Quebec provincial budget is funding to help preserve what is left of print media in the province, and the funding is capped at no more than $7 million per company per year. It is a tragedy when you think about how many people grew up with print media. Some still use print media. For instance, my grandfather has subscriptions to various newspapers, such as the Sherbrooke Record and the National Post, opposed to accepting the new media format of online versions of print. It's inevitable that one day will come where everything will be online and printed papers will no longer be in existence. I'm actually one of the minority of my generation who appreciates paper format media. I prefer having a physical copy opposed to online versions. However, more and more, paper formats are becoming less of an option. On one odd day, I had gone to the Bishop's bookstore to glance at the magazines and was hoping to find a copy of Maclean's. To my disappointment, I had found out that the store was no longer supplying magazines, as they were not a big sell. This is the theory of supply and demand in practice. This is not just at the school bookstore, but as well at pharmacies. Going into a pharmacy in downtown Lennoxville, I inquired once again about the lack of magazine selection and was told that the pharmacy was cutting down on the selection as they are not major sellers. It is nice to see governments make efforts into preserving such industries, but at the same time, some would argue, why bother throwing money at a dying industry when modernization is inevitable? Taking the news to the western part of Canada, a citizen of BC is petitioning the Canadian government to place greater restrictions on a matter called birth tourism. Birth tourism is a phenomenon whereby non-Canadian pregnant women would give birth in Canada, which grants their child a Canadian passport and much of what goes with it, which is healthcare, education, and ultimately Canadian citizenship. Prior to coming across this article, I had not heard of such a phenomenon in Canada. With reason, there's a greater prevalence in BC. According to reports, the Richmond BC Hospital experiences this every day. According to a doctor of Richmond Hospital, this is done on purpose, often to yield the benefits of health care and citizenship. To provide an example, pregnant women come from China because giving birth in China means giving birth without an epidural. This issue is somewhat of a controversial issue, but is not an issue secluded to Canada. Recall that the U.S. was once tackling this same issue. The 14th Amendment of the United States clarifies that those born on American soil are American citizens, which prompted incentives for non-Americans to give birth on American soil, and would eventually leverage their way into citizenship or reside in the country illegally so as to remain with their child. And Trump was looking to abolish this part of the amendment to prevent similar cases from occurring in the future. When I said controversial, I mean that there are two sympathetic sides to this story. Consider that citizens are coming from third world countries, want a better livelihood for themselves and their families. But the general sentiment I pick up from Canadians is that they tend to be more favorable to individuals who are in Canada for legitimate purposes, much like Syrian refugees. We saw that communities across the nation have started charities and funds to help refugees integrate into our society after leaving a treacherous, war-torn country. Entering this country illegally, however, is not really a situation where Canadians sympathize with the most. This is validated with the fact that a Liberal MP, Joe Pesolido, backed his support for this petition, and Liberals are generally considered the most sympathetic to different situations. And this is not just a stereotype. I'll provide an example. Many Liberals greatly oppose Kelly Leach's greater screenings for immigrants upon entry into Canada while she was campaigning for the federal PC party. We understand that foreigners want better livelihoods, but how and why can birthing tourism be detrimental to Canada? One of the main reasons is that it is a burden on taxpayers and the Canadian healthcare system. And this is mainly attributed to the fact that foreigners are enjoying benefits without actually contributing to Canadian society. This is also what is known as the free rider system. People enjoy the benefits without actually contributing to society, hence are just along for the free ride. And this can refer to many of the situations associated with birth tourism. And one of the main instances Canadians are most concerned with, particularly in BC, is the fact that would be if these quote-unquote Canadians would leave Canada and then only return when they need something within the health system. They need an operation, they need surgery, what have you. So sometimes they're not actually physically staying in Canada, but only returning when they need the benefits, which they cannot have access to in their foreign countries. According to Immigration and Citizenship Canada, Canadian citizenship is greatly valued across the globe. Canada saw a record-breaking number of applicants in 2013, with 330,000 applicants desiring Canadian citizenship. The thing to remember in terms of immigration is that we do want immigration to happen here in Canada, so long as immigrants do contribute to Canadian society, as we do not need any more free riders in society. I will provide greater updates on this petition as they develop. Taking the news to Eastern Canada, similar to the city of Montreal and in Canada as a whole, Nova Scotia saw an increase in tourism within the past year. Nova Scotia had visits from 2.4 million, an increase of 9% from the previous year. Nova Scotia is a vacation haven for many Canadians, and some even retire there because the housing prices are far more affordable, not to mention being by the natural beauty of the ocean. An estimated $2.7 billion was spent in the province by tourists, adding to its provincial revenue. Given that Nova Scotia is among the poorest of the Canadian provinces, with an annual GDP of $41,000, for the 2006 year, this is good news. According to Nova Scotia Tourism Facts, tourism is typically valued at $2 billion, and $722 million of these funds goes into Nova Scotia's GDP. Nova Scotia attributes this increase in tourists to its increasing marketing of the province, especially in considering it was Canada's 150th birthday, which was a big pull factor for tourists. And part of what makes Nova Scotia a magnet during Canada's 150th is that there's a lot of history, being one of the first provinces to join Confederation in 1867. And this is not exclusively the case for Nova Scotia. Tourism is becoming a thriving industry in Canada. This will make matters for Canada better, increasing federal, provincial revenues, and increasing Canada's GDP. It's time for another segment of What's in Parliament, providing the details of the latest bills and legislation in Parliament. On the House of Commons agenda yesterday, a third reading was scheduled for Bill C-55, an act to amend the Oceans Act and the Petroleum Resources Act. This bill is sponsored by Dominic LeBlanc, a Liberal MP. Bill C-55 specifies restrictions of ocean activities from protected regions. This follows into the Liberal government's promise to increase the amount of protection of marine areas to 10% by 2020. As much of the ocean is occupied by ships of all kinds, there is already much activity taking place on our oceans, that greater protection does make any government in power look good. If this bill passes the third reading, all it needs is the signature of the Governor General to secure royal assent and become law. Today in Parliament, Bill C-344 will go through its reporting stage in the House of Commons, following its review and discussion by a designated committee. Bill C-344, an act to amend the Department of Public Works and Government Services Act, grants the Minister of Public Works the right to acquire an assessment of the benefits associated with construction, maintenance, or a repair project. The bill is sponsored by Ramesh Sangha, who took over the sponsorship of this bill from Ahmed Hossein, who is the Minister of Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship. This is due to the fact that ministers and parliamentary secretaries cannot advance their own private members' bills. The reason for this is so as not to provide the top heads of government with too much power. As such, Bill C-344 will allow ministers to analyze whether given development projects are beneficial for communities prior to issuing contracts. Conservative MP John Barlow of Foothills, Alberta, expressed doubts about this bill, particularly in regards to this legislation would make it harder for businesses to acquire approval for their ventures, not to mention adding additional red tape to project developments. This is not surprising given the Conservatives have a great interest in promoting business affairs, so anything they perceive as a barrier to business development, they will shoot down. Given that only a handful of private members' bills are taken into consideration, and with a Liberal majority, there is a greater likelihood that this bill will be passed, but time will tell, and only then can we be certain. That is it for this session of What's in Parliament. More to come at a later date. The federal government has announced investments into improving bilingualism in Canada. Specifically, funds will be allocated into improving resources for learning French as a second language in the primary sector. Additionally, the government will allocate funds into initiatives to encourage French immigration. The funding amount has not been disclosed, but sources indicate that the funding will not be given to the federal or provincial governments, but rather to organizations that specialize in the French language. This initiative also is looking into making Ottawa, Canada's capital, into an officially bilingual city. There are a lot of misconceptions that non-Canadians hold. Much of what I heard is that everyone expects that Canada is French, which is not completely true, because it is one of the official languages. French Canadiens are a majority in the province of Quebec, but are a minority in Canada as a whole. The only official bilingual province in Canada is New Brunswick. While the country as a whole considers English and French as the two official languages, it does not necessarily imply that it is wholly bilingual. For instance, check out any House of Commons question period video, and you will notice that for the majority of the time, members of Parliament will be addressing each other in English. This is more so the case for oral communication, because if you are to visit any governmental website, there will be documents and resources provided in both French and English. And this is simply because services have to be provided in both French and English. With that being said, it is an asset to be bilingual, especially for civil servants, but in general, it is always an asset to be able to speak the language. I think this investment is not only beneficial to French Canadians, who would appreciate this funding as respect for their culture and will make them feel relevant in Canadian society, but as well for Anglophones who may want to learn the language and be able to have this knowledge and take it anywhere they go in Canada. It is relevant to preserve our nation's languages as it composes our national identity. In saying that, I would like to take this time to recognize that technically Canada has more than two official languages, but dozens. In considering Indigenous bands across the country have their own official languages. Time and again, we fail to recognize these languages in composition of our Canadian identity. So while we are making progress in promoting the French language, we have far more to achieve with recognizing and honoring Indigenous language in Canada. Not to spin this issue 360, but language rights are the sixth provision of our charter, and as Canada is multicultural, it does mean we need to provide a greater scope of our languages in Canada. English and French are the most dominant, but let's not forget the minority of languages spoken for future reference. That is your Politics in Action report. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you the next time. I am Emily with CJMQ 88.9 FM.